For Antiwar.com, I'm Scott Horton, and this is Antiwar Radio. All right, everybody. Welcome to the new show. Sort of like the old show. It's Anti-War Radio. And thanks everybody who's emailed me and contacted me and Facebook poked me and whatever, asking me what the hell's taking so long. As many of you know, I moved out here to California at the beginning of the year. It's taken me a little while to get all my technical difficulties straightened out. But this will be the first interview of the new show, and I'm very happy to say that we're still going to be on Chaos Radio here. But rather than doing a Chaos Radio show with the interview archives going up on antiwar.com, it's going to be antiwar.com interviews that'll be played on Chaos Radio, a subtle difference at least for now. But there are other things that are, you know, at least warming up, if not actually cooking up, so we'll be working on that and hopefully having further announcements for you guys in the future about what's going to happen with Anti-War Radio from here. But for now, I'm trying to get back in the game here, and I'm happy to introduce my first guest on the show for 2009. It's Joshua Frank from Antiwar.com, Counterpunch, and Dissident Voice. He's also the co-author with Jeffrey Sinclair of Red State Rebels. Welcome to the first new Anti-War Radio 2009 Los Angeles edition. Joshua, it's nice to meet you finally in person here.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's so good to be here. Thanks for having me on. I'm privileged.
I really appreciate having you on. And, you know, we've talked a few times over the years about various matters, but I think there's a common ground between us that we both recognize. Not just do we agree on our list of priorities of government policies that need to be immediately stopped and reversed. But we also, I think, both really come pretty close to eye, even though we do come from different perspectives, on the need for real realignment around those top priorities and a need to kind of, you know, take everybody's pet issue and let's put those aside for a little while and see if we really can combine to lead coalitions of the best of the left and the right and appeal to the best of the left and the right. And so I think we agree on the issues, which obviously we can talk about, but I'd really like to get you to address that realignment and what you see as the possible future of the realignment that we've actually had some success in forging over the Bush administration years.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the first thing we need to do is start to shed those labels, right, of the right and the left, because we think of the right and the left as being something that is a caricature of Washington politics, which it's not. I mean, I think a lot of the ideas that you and I might agree on and the sort of belief sets that we have coming into talking even tonight are very similar. But what separates us is this sort of ideology that you're a libertarian, I'm a leftist. And that's not really an accurate portrayal of our agreements, because we probably agree on 95% of the stuff we will be talking about tonight.
Well, and, you know, I like to think that, well, all the issues that contradict my point notwithstanding, that ultimately, you know, liberalism is about liberty at its core and, you know, the belief in the availability of liberty, you know, that it ought to be extended to people who've got the least chance ought to have some too kind of, you know, idea. But primarily it's about, you know, freedom itself. Mm-hmm. And conservatives, the best ones, seek basically to conserve the original American Revolution, which was based on that conception of mm-hmm. liberty, and conserve the Bill of Rights and constitutional forms, separations of powers and so forth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of warmongering and pro-torturism and so forth on the right, but there's also a lot of, you know, Ron Paul leaning, leave the world alone because it's the right thing to do kind of.
Well, I mean, it's funny
when
I talk to people that might not be familiar with my politics or of the kind of things that we would agree on, they are quick to say that I'm a conservative, because really the issues and the beliefs that I have are very, very conservative, whether it's on the environment or it's even on foreign policy. We don't want our tax dollars going to fund overseas interventions that are based on lies and fabrications.
And radical ideologies.
And radical ideologies. Yeah. Absolutely. And
there you go.
That's
Joshua Frank, hardcore right winger, everybody.
Absolutely. No, I mean, on these issues, absolutely I am. And I think that's a very important distinction.
This is why I like all these labels, is because I like to bring them all out here so that we can kind of beat the crap out of them and kind of show, you know, where they fall short of holding any real definition.
Or
you know?
It could be Scott Horton, a radical leftist on this issue.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I'm a complete piece-nick when it comes to Empire, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Although I was never a right winger, never have been. That's kind of my problem, is I don't never fit in any of these categories to break out of them.
But a really true conservative, not even on foreign policy, but on domestic policy, doesn't want the government spying on them, doesn't want them wiretapping their phones, doesn't want them to intrude on their daily lives, doesn't want them to tell them what to do and feel like they're invading their privacy. And that can be a right-wing thing, that can be a left-wing thing, but I really think that's just sort of a human liberty.
Well, it's going to be really strange, isn't it, as we go into these Obama years, beginning just early next week here, when all the right-wingers pretend, or at least I shouldn't say pretend, that's kind of prejudgmental or whatever, but all of a sudden they're going to find themselves in the role of the opposition. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it's going to be pretty hard for me to take seriously from a bunch of torture mongers who've been telling me render under Caesar, which is Caesar's for the last 8 years, you know?
Well, I think at the core, though, there are going to be a lot of conservatives and a lot of Republicans that aren't all that upset with the policies that are going to come out of the Obama administration. And I think that's a reality that the left and the people that are going to be cheerleading on Inauguration Day don't realize. I mean, this is a guy that supports putting more troops in Afghanistan. This is a guy that supported wiretapping. This is a guy that supported the original version of the Patriot Act. I mean, he is not someone that defends liberties on the left or the right. So I think really, the people that know what's going on the right are not going to be that upset by Obama's inauguration. I mean, on some levels they will, definitely, because they've lost power in Washington, but their ideologies are going to be living on, and I think that's a greater accomplishment of the right wing over the past 8 years, that they're still carrying on.
Yeah, that's certainly a good point. And in fact, you know, when you look at the David Frums of the world in the, you know, among political commentators, but then of course like the Henry Kissingers and all the former statesman types on the right, all say, oh, Obama's done a great job. And I guess it was Jeremy Scahill compiled the list of all the people who, including kind of some radical neoconservative types, who were saying, mm-hmm. This is great. I mean, John McCain could have appointed this very same cabinet. This is wonderful.
Well, it's absolutely true. But look at the issues, too. I mean, the thing that scares me the most, and I was no fan of George W. Bush, but I think that it's naive to think that he was the creator of everything that's bad. And if anything is good, and we should look at the silver lining of the Bush years, which is empire has been scaled back dramatically under the Bush administration. On the surface, it might not look like that, because we have troops in Iraq, we have troops in Afghanistan, but NATO's almost obsolete. We are not going to be able to march into Iran with international support. People aren't even believing the lies that we're talking about with their nuclear production and so forth. The war in Iraq has been an absolute disaster.
Rollback in Georgia.
All of rollback in Georgia. Absolutely. I mean, down the line, empire has been scaled back dramatically under the Bush years. And it's been the human toll has been almost exponential, and that should not be noticed. But we should at least look at the silver lining. This is where we're at.
Yeah.
My fear is that Obama is going to come in. The anti-war movement has been completely silent since he's been even running, basically, at the forefront. It was easy to oppose Hillary Clinton because she's been a warmonger since the get-go. But Obama wasn't in office, didn't vote one way or the other on Iraq intervention. I can see an Obama administration, because of this lack of resistance, moving into Darfur. I can see him getting away with strikes against certain sites in Iran. He's been absolutely silent on what's going on. The big issue right now, foreign policy issue of our times, other than Iraq, is what's going on right now in Gaza, with the peace accord, or ceasefire, I should say, not a peace accord, a ceasefire being negotiated. He's been absolutely silent on this because he actually supports it. And yeah. David Axelrod went on all the Sunday shows and talked about it. So, I mean, but there's no real pressure against him, against these sorts of policies. And I think that's to the detriment of everything that we might be looking at it with a smile because of the Bush years.
Yeah, well, and that really is the most destructive thing about this entire conservative, liberal, left-right construct is that the people themselves completely flip-flop from opposition to cheerleaders mm-hmm. back and forth, half and half, each time, every 8 or 4 years mm-hmm. if necessary. And, you know, I don't want to name names or anything because I really haven't even been keeping up, but I guess, you know, I'm prepared to find myself quite disappointed with some of the people who I've really enjoyed reading their stuff and supporting their work over the last years mm-hmm. as they kind of find themselves in the position of having to defend Obama. I want to ask you, what do you think maybe the role of the internet might be in helping to prevent a little bit of that? Because somebody like Glenn Greenwald, for example, has right. really established himself mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. just among you know, leftists, but on by libertarians. He's writing in the American Conservative sometimes now, that kind of thing. But on the left, particularly, he's really established himself as an honest broker and a real dealer of facts and knowledge and holding people to account. And he provides sure. hyperlinks to what he's talking about. And mm-hmm. and I wonder how difficult it's going to be for the pro-Obama part of the blogosphere to somehow write that off and pretend that the problem now is Glenn, not them, that the problem now is, you know, him, not Obama. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? I have great hope, I guess, for the internet that a lot of that hardcore left anti-war sentiment is going yeah. to have to kind of stay because
yeah.
people are able to contradict you right there in your own comment section, right there right. in front of everybody, you know?
Right. As long as people are dying and there's international media covering it, I think the internet's going to stay lively. And as long as it's not regulated, we're going to have these free flow of conversations and information. As far as movements, though, in the U.S., I think that the internet may play a role. We'll see how it turns out. But Obama's really seeing how he can exploit it as well. I really have a fear that a lot of the people that didn't look back on the Bush years with an honest eye are going to continue that through the Obama years. And what I mean by that is we can look at the most egregious policies that came out of the Bush years. And the ones that we can probably agree on are the Patriot Act, the war, and you know, the war on terror,
Homeland
and so
security,
forth, Homeland
agency,
Security.
Yeah.
Absolutely, but those were all bipartisan things. I mean, these are things that came out of, in some cases,
including the wiretapping and the torture, the secret programs,
well,
or
the invasion of Iraq.
Stuff.
I mean, the yeah. Of you know, the Democrats controlled the Senate at the time that this was approved.
Joe Biden was the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Absolutely. So I mean, you can't just look at the Bush administration as being the bearer of the past 8 years and the horror that has transpired. I mean, these are things. I mean, it was because the Democrats didn't put up any opposition. They didn't. I mean, even Supreme Court nominations, whatever. They did not put up a fight, even mm-hmm. though they might have symbolically
well,
disagreed.
You know, a common theme, and this is something that Alexander Coburn mocked in his speech last June at the Future Freedom Foundation conference. He talked about the secret Obama. Oh, well, you see, there's a secret Obama, and all you have to do is believe in him a lot. And then once he has total power, then he will reveal himself to be the angel that I want him to be. Right now, he just has to pretend that he's a evil imperialist, you know, bloodthirsty killer. Mm-hmm. But he only has to say that to get elected. He's going to be great, like, once he's in power. But then, you know, I wonder whether there's actually perhaps something to that, that really he in that kind of general election, especially against a warmonger like McCain and a media that at least is compliant enough that mm-hmm. the issue can really be framed that the least warmonger of the presidential candidates is in fact the most dangerous of them because he won't protect us enough and that kind of narrative. Maybe he was bullshitting about what a killer he is and that he actually does intend to soften at least some of these positions. I don't want to put too much stock in. I asked for your comment on if you saw Hillary Clinton in her confirmation speech, in her introductory remarks, I guess, to the Senate hearing, mentioned the plight of Palestinian suffering. And
right.
how, hey, you know, that really does matter. And it was sort of like she was talking to the lobby, to the Israel lobby, saying, hey, look, you know, we do have to take this into account, whether you want us to or not. We're going to.
But how can they not? How can they not? And we got to, I mean, I think that.
Well, Bush clearly hasn't. So I guess, you know, do you believe that Hillary Clinton will be a better Secretary of State on this issue than Condoleezza Rice? Is she going to actually tell the Kadima Party or the Likudniks if Netanyahu takes the prime ministership? Is she going to tell them, no, look, and lay down the law? Or is she going to tell them, all right, you know, let's, I'm your number one partner. Let's go ahead and do
well,
our worst.
Well, but I mean, we got to even look at a fair assessment of Condoleezza. I mean, she did not originally support what's coming out of the UN. She was originally, as antiwar.com reported even, she was not in support of this. She was actually taken aback by being pressured by her higher-ups to do so. So I see Hillary Clinton as far further right than Condoleezza on a lot of issues. I think that from the Obama administration, it's really an unknown entity at this time. We've seen him in his speeches at AIPAC. We've seen him appease the Israel lobby repeatedly. We just don't know how he's going to respond to the situation. And it looks like it might be wrapped up by the time he takes office and the time he really can speak about it. And I think that might have been one of the reasons why Israel invaded when they did. Also because they're in the midst of elections. There's a number of reasons, but I really think a lot of it had to do because Obama was an unknown entity. They didn't know how he was going to respond to this. So in that case, yes. I mean, and there are going to be those first few tests that Obama faces. I think we're going to be able to tell a lot of how it's going to form his foreign policy agenda.
Yeah, I mean, he's got quite a list of executive orders to repeal on his first day before, you know, I got to give him 24 hours before he's a war criminal because, you know, there's a lot of things to call off and he can only sign documents so fast. But, you know, how far he really goes in, well, and, you know, I think this is sort of part of the realignment, too, is when we talk about putting off certain issues in favor of the most important ones.
Mm-hmm.
Best I can tell, you and I pretty much agree that the most important ones are things that we want them to stop doing right now. And the things that we would like them to do are much lower down on the list. But what we gotta have, first of all, is we gotta stop, for example, torturing people and pretending that the president can authorize people to go ahead and break federal laws that ban such things, you know, the war crime statutes and these kinds of things. We gotta stop the aggressive wars and all the spending on killing people overseas, propping up dictatorships, torturing people, the threats to our Bill of Rights. We don't want them to, I mean, I guess you can turn all that around, say, you know, make the Fifth Amendment strong again or whatever, but how about just stop assaulting it? The Fifth Amendment is fine. Let's just get rid of the things that are infringing upon it.
Yeah. Well, and I agree with that, I hope that's sort of what transpires. What I'm fearful of, and going back to kind of what we were originally talking about, is, yeah, some situations might get better. We might have more influence in the Middle East in some situations. But we're going to go and throw tens of thousands of more troops into Afghanistan, for example. If we're going to go into Darfur, if we're going to continue the intervention that was very popular among Clintonians, which are now surrounding the Obama administration, right? I mean, these are the people that have the direct influence on his foreign policy team. These are people that supported the, you know, what's going on in Bosnia. They supported what we did in the 90s there. They supported the sanctions against Iraq. And I think that they would support similar actions against Iran. They are still very hawkish when it comes to Israel, absolutely. They are very big supporters of the war on terror. Now, is he going to go in and radically change these ideologies? No. I mean, what I'm more fearful of is that he's actually saying he's going to be sort of the pilot of the plane that went down on the Hudson, right? I mean, he's going to land it more judiciously. He's going to be a steadier hand at the helm of empire. And that's a scarier precedent because there isn't any opposition to that. There's going to be a lot of celebration on Tuesday because of Bush's leaving Washington, his whole squad packing up and heading back to Texas, right? But there isn't going to be opposition to what's going to continue. We still have a war. We still have all of these problems that Obama needs to respond to. And as long as we're cheerleading on the sidelines of Bush's leaving office, we're not opposing what's actually continuing to enter into the debate. And I think that is the biggest problem that I see when it comes to this left-right ideology, because it's not about issues. It's about who wins and who loses. And right now, the Republicans have lost big time.
Yeah.
And there's cause for celebration for that, but we need to get back to work immediately.
Yeah, yeah, not let team spirit kind of obfuscate matters. And
yeah.
Well, let me ask you about this. You brought up Darfur a couple of times, and, you know, I guess everybody knows that there's a certain, maybe different certain segments of the left that have decided that stopping the humanitarian catastrophe in Darfur, which is a western region of Sudan in northern Africa there, that that is the cause celeb and whatever, and this is the thing that all real caring liberal people care about, and that something must be done. And I wonder, do you know much about the actual situation there, or can you address that, or is you're just generally opposed to do good or meddling where you don't think it's really going to work out kind of thing?
Well, I mean, on the first point, I'm opposed absolutely to any sort of intervention that the U.S. has direct involvement in. I think that the knowledge I do have of what's going on in Darfur is presented in our media is not fully the accurate story. I think you have to go to the foreign press for that. And I don't think it's at this point, we're not sure at what level of genocide was going on. We don't know if we were going to intervene, what side the U.S. would even be on. We obviously know that there is a Muslim segment that if the U.S. is seen as supporting the opposition to them, that it could inflame even more Islamic radicalism toward the United States, against the United States' foreign policy in the region. It's a situation that isn't, if it's not fully understood as a black and white issue, as intervention-wise, there's no way that the U.S. should be intervening. And not to even mention that we're overextended militarily, not to mention that we don't know the outcome of these sorts of things. We go in with good intentions, and I honestly believe there has been times when the U.S. has gone in with good intentions, but there's been dramatic blowback from that. I think the U.S. supporting of people in Afghanistan fighting against the Soviet invasion at the time might have been, on the face of it, an issue that was probably should have been supported. But you never can foresee what the blowback's going to be, and obviously it's been horrendous in that case.
Yeah.
And you don't know exactly what side you're going to go on and support certain elements that could turn against you in the future. It's not our business, and we don't need to be involved in it.
I wonder about the role of humanitarian war as, like, kind of repentance somehow, or, like, or even just Iraq guilt, you know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of liberals bought into the Iraq war because they said they were going to go save the little people and all that kind of thing, and then they should have known better. It was left up to a bunch of Republicans to run it, and a million people died. But we want to prove that we really are Superman, and our military, our army really is there.
Can be good.
The betterment of the world and whatever. And I guess it really goes down to, like, just, you know, the basic belief system that, you know, wherever there's not a liberal government program, there's a Hobbesian chaos, and so they must fill up every vacuum in the world with their space, you know, their mass.
No, it's true, and I think that the Obama administration's big challenge is going to be, how do you manage continuing to realign the alliances that have been broken during the Bush administration and still be seen as an honest broker? And not as a country that is imperialist or, you know, America first, because that's really that's exactly what came out of 9/11, right? That we are in it to protect ourselves. We will not abide by international law. We're going to do whatever it takes to do so. The UN Security Council doesn't matter. It never has mattered. We're going to invade. We're going to do whatever we want.
At the same time, invoking it's all for their own good.
It's all part of their justification, too. Yeah,
so it's not all America first. It's them first, but we insist. You know, it's kind of what it is.
Right. Well, and it's what we're seeing right now with Israel and Palestine, right? I mean, this is – the Security Council matters not at all.
Right.
Even though – we have reports of what Israel has done to the UN bases in Gaza, destroyed them. I mean, we aren't seeing an uproar against Israel's aggression within the United States, and that's because it's a sad commentary because our media is so inept. but it's also a sad commentary because the new leader coming into Washington is so inept.
Well, and you know, I'm really worried about Iraq too, and it seems like so many people take at face value that the election of Barack Obama, hey, he said he was against the war back during the time of it and whatever, so that means that he's going to end it, and so I don't have to worry about it anymore if it takes a couple of years or whatever. Well, I'm sure he's working it out, and I have a feeling that this guy's honeymoon is going to last, you know, 5 or 6 years like George Bush's did, where he's just allowed to get away with basically anything, and you know, I'm already hearing people talk to me. I was on a radio show in Florida where the host was a good liberal anti-war guy who thought everything was just fine now. And I was making the case that anything less than absolute and unrelenting pressure on Obama to end that war immediately will result in that war lasting forever and ever and ever. Now is not the time to compromise and back off our anti-war stance because we think we won. I'm not sure it's in the bag like that.
No, I mean, we're going into the fourth quarter now, and we can win or we can lose, and we need to keep up our fight. And I think what Jeremy Scahill, for instance, has uncovered, which is very interesting, is that even though Obama may want to pull out some of our troops, when I say pull out, I'm not saying bring home. He's probably going to be shifting them to another country in the area. But we're going to be then supporting a private military in its place, a more expensive military.
Yeah, and a military, Blackwater will be left behind in Iraq is what you're saying.
With more contracts.
Yeah.
With more money allocated from the U.S. taxpayer. And a private enterprise that has no oversight. They're not accountable as they should be, as the U.S. military would be, at least in some regards. And so I think that's something that we need to look at a little bit closer, because it's something that can clearly go under the radar. If Obama starts pulling troops out, we have to look at what's going in. We have to look at where those troops are going to be sent. Because you know they're going to candy coat it for us.
The TV news bureaus don't even have people there now, so we don't even have pictures on TV of the war at all anymore. If we're not getting them from the army, I mean, they'll basically be able to get away with saying the war's over.
Or if they are,
we only left 100,000 armed contractors there.
There are great print journalists there, and some of them you've interviewed, like Patrick Coburn.
Sure.
But as he has even pointed out, there's TV stations and TV news channels that are there, U.S. ones. They're allocating millions of dollars annually to cover this, and they haven't been on air in over a month. They can't get their stories on air, especially outside of the green zone. If it's not about restaurants opening up and about, you know, prosperity coming back to Baghdad, it's not going to make CNN. You know, it's not going to make ABC. So we're not hearing the true story about what's going on there. And
yeah, it's amazing. And during the election, it was, I guess, in the poll, the exit poll or whatever, it was, you know, what's your most important issue? And I guess 10% said Iraq, or Iraq was averaged as 10th on the list or something, one of those stupid statistics. It just drove me mad to think that, like, that's really all it takes is the surge working, not in Iraq, but as a slogan on us. That if you just say, it's working, it worked, just like I told you it was working, then that's it, really. I mean, it isn't like Patrick Coburn is going to be a regular guest on NBC News to explain any other way around. So, you know, the slogan goes unchallenged, and the slogan sticks. And here we are, it doesn't matter how bad
we
lose over
there. Well, and of
course
the Obama administration wasn't going to make it a priority. They were never going to make it a key tenet of their campaign, because they knew that the Democrats were going to get hammered on the issue, mostly because they always supported Bush's war.
Yeah.
They supported and disagreed on certain aspects of managing the war, sure, but on the actual basis of it and the philosophy behind it, they were in complete support of that. And Obama's right-hand man, Joe Biden, was the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, if Obama had picked someone that actually legitimately wanted to alter U.S. foreign policy in the region, we may have seen a different debate. But he steered clear of that and didn't even go. I mean, he could have called on Chuck Hagel on that issue, and we might actually had a real serious conversation about that. But he stuck with someone that was middle of the road, that supported the war, because he needed to, you know, be seen as, he says, he needed to be seen as tough on foreign policy. And so I know that was never an issue, and I don't believe it's going to be an issue. I think the economic downturn has taken taken the airwaves, so to speak, instead.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It really is too bad that you can only, I guess, have one big story at a time, even on a 24-hour bunch of 24-hour news channels.
24-hour news, you know, soundbite news channels. That's why.
Well, I guess I'm just old enough now. There are a couple of gray hairs on this chin. Mm-hmm. That I remember that the whole spiel about the invention of the cable news networks was that they're going to be able to really do in-depth investigative reporting and dedicate, you know, whole hour and 2 hour segments to getting at the real truth about the most important stories. Instead, all they do is sit around and talk about the same cold snap every 15 minutes on the 15 minutes and go on that way, you know?
Right. Well, it's the idea of news and independent media has always been freelance journalists, independent media has always been more free to cover the real story. And that's why the internet, that's why antiwar.com, that's why Counterpunch, that's why these places still remain as popular as they are, because they still are a great source of news and commentary. And there's definitely good stuff that's coming out of mainstream media. But it's few and far between. It's much more controlled.
Yeah, and they never give you the what it means. That's why you have to have Counterpunch and antiwar.com to say, you know, we all saw that, you know, so and so said this to that reporter, but, you know, here's some context for you, kind of thing. And I mean, where are you going to get good context? It ain't going to be from Broad and Sanger in the New York Times, you know what I mean? They'll give you something, but it isn't going to be context.
No, that's true. And that's why it remains an important medium of information that I really, really hope stays free over the next 8 years.
Well, and I really hope that we can continue what's been our mission at antiwar.com. Certainly is we're going to keep trying to make it this way. But I really hope that we can continue to make progress on bringing together the people on the right and the people on the left with libertarianism as the moderate center. Because, I mean, right now the people who call themselves the centrists, why, they're extremists. They're not moderates at all. They're the ones who are for every terrible thing. The libertarians need to be the real moderate center with the best of the left and the right leaning our way, rather than, you know, letting all the power go to those who would do the worst to us all. And
And
it seems like, especially, you know, like you said about, well, I guess in contrast to Sudan, you know, black and white issues. Hey, empire, aggressive war, kidnapping, torture, and murder, and the destruction of the Bill of Rights. Those are black and white issues. Let's get our priorities straight. Let's keep them straight, you know, and continue to have, you know, Greenwald in the American Conservative and you know, Alex Coburn and people like you at antiwar.com and continue to, you know, try to keep these alliances strong, because it's going to be tough, you know, as the big move takes place, as the two major political feelings in the country switch from pro to con and vice versa, that, you know, we keep our bearings straight and that we provide, you know, a good voice of consistency for people caught up in the waves washing over their heads, you know?
No, and that's true. And I think true libertarians, true lefties, whatever you want to call them, labels, whatnot, when it comes down to it, it's not about labels. It's about issues. And those issues are going to stay consistent and matter no matter who's in office. And the only way your issues even are listened to, are dealt with, is if you continue to put pressure, continue to raise your hackles when they're not being addressed. I mean, the big collapse of the left or in the anti-war movement in general during the Obama candidacy was very reminiscent of what happened during Kerry's, if we remember back even four years ago, that they weren't out on the streets protesting Kerry, even though he was, you know, hand in hand with generals and other people, even during the Democratic convention, saying that he was
horrible.
Was absolutely, and there wasn't any protest. You know, there was a big stink about the protest in New York at the time, but they weren't in Boston protesting Kerry. Right? I mean, and it's the same with this last 4 years. There was not an anti-war movement that was on Obama's coattails day in and day out, holding him to account the positions that he's – they weren't outside his APEC, you know, speech.
Yeah.
His foreign policy speech. They
weren't outside. What do you want to do? Help the Republicans?
Right.
And the only Democrat we got.
So really,
Joshua.
I mean, if we really could go back, I mean, that's what we should have been doing. But now we have to get our act together, we have to get out there, and we have to be on him 24/7, because certainly the other side is. The contractors, the military contractors, the military industrial complex is continually pulling him in their direction, in his, their direction 24 hours a day. They're relentless.
Well, let's have a little bit of faith that if he does the right thing, that it will help him. Mm-hmm. You know, why does everybody got to believe all the time that you got to do the evil things in order to get ahead? Mm-hmm. How about we would all appreciate it if he would end the freaking war already? You know what I mean?
But the problem with what happened during the election was that he was receiving the support of the anti-war movement without the anti-war movement putting any demands on his candidacy. They were giving him full support without any restrictions, without any, you know, call to action, or even, they didn't even have to listen to what their real concerns were, because they were going to receive their support regardless. And that's really damaging to the social movements. I think it was horrific for the anti-war movement. And so for them to regroup, it's going to take a lot of work. I don't know if we're going to have that Cindy Sheehan in the fields of Texas as bringing the anti-war movement to light like happened after Kerry's defeat in 2004.
Yeah.
We may need something like that. The Winter Soldier hearings, they didn't break the silence of the corporate media. We need real, real action, and we need real change in foreign policy. And Obama may listen to us. I don't know if he will or he won't. But if we're not speaking and we're not yelling at him, he's not going to hear us.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the whole thing. We have to assume that he'll never see the light, and we have to try our best to make him feel the heat. That,
right.
Listen, you have, and, you know, for those keeping up with Glenn Greenwald's blog, which I hope everybody reads Glenn Greenwald all damn day. I don't know why not to. It's just great stuff. And he's been keeping track of how, you know, they called him out on wanting to appoint John Brennan, the pro-torturer, mm-hmm. the guy who publicly advocated the torture program on television to be his director of Central Intelligence. And the guy got bumped down to head of counterterrorism now, which is not good enough. But it was pretty clear. And there was another example, too, I forget off the top of my head, where during the transition, as people like Greenwald have called the Obama team out, they mm-hmm. have adjusted already. They've been made, seemingly, they've been made to feel the heat in certain ways already.
Right.
So it is, number one, it's possible. And number two, it's clearly necessary. You know, when this guy's already betrayed his willingness and, in fact, eagerness to appoint the Hillary Clintons and Robert Gateses and John Brennans, we have to turn that heat up as hot as we can to make him live up to what he, well, sort of claimed. You know, because he never really did outright say any of the things everybody thinks he said. But
No, he never ran as a progressive. He never ran as someone that was anti-empire or anti-war, really. Nope. No.
As a better manager for it, you know,
exactly.
As you said. I'm running to save the empire from these goofballs who almost
who are really
off
messing
the cliff,
it up.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, but I mean, I think it goes back to that central argument that Obama, what his main goal is now when he comes into office next week, is to get on the phone with countries and leaders that haven't received a phone call from the Oval Office in a long time and to rekindle those old flames so that the U.S. can continue to mount its aggression across the globe.
Yeah, with better cooperation.
With better cooperation, which
international community.
Which empire isn't just about the United States. It's about us having
reciprocal relationships, yeah, with the other governments,
and it's a very dangerous. I think we're entering a very dangerous time, because Obama is going to be able to do that with a lot more positive effect than the Bush administration was.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen. This has been very interesting. I hope we can make a regular habit of this.
Thanks so much for having me, Scott. It's great.
Everybody, that's Joshua Frank, a regular contributor to antiwar.com, to Counterpunch, and Dissident Voice. He's the co-author with Jeffrey St. Clair of Red State Rebels. And should be back in a couple of days, I hope, with a few guests I have in mind. So we work on the telephone line. It is the return of anti-war radio. Or I guess it was. Now it's over. Ha ha.